Thank you, Artie, and pleasure to do this again. We're going to talk about semantics today, language, and whether it matters. So I titled this, What's the Deal with Non-Radiographic Axial Spinal Arthritis? Because it's a diagnosis that we didn't have until about 10 or 15 years ago, and one that I think confuses the heck out of our trainees and a lot of our primary care docs, and in fact, a lot of rheumatologists are not quite sure how to deal with this, and so I wanted to sort of tell you why I'm not so sure the name matters. My disclosures, which I showed you earlier, whoops. Okay, so we're going to start with a question before I even get rolling. What is non-radiographic axSpA? What distinguishes this from ankylosing spondylitis? The duration of disease, response to treatment, sacroiliitis, or functional impairment? What's the main differentiating factor? All right, enough. Yes, that's all it is. It is simply a diagnosis, in effect, it's a diagnosis of exclusion in that it means that you have axial spondyl arthritis and don't have radiographic sacroiliitis, so you get lumped into this bucket. And what I'm going to try to persuade you in the next few minutes is that making that call doesn't actually change what we do very much. All right, so here's where this all comes from. The history of axial spondyl arthritis. So for years, you all know, we had the modified New York criteria for ankylosing spondylitis. I have never seen the unmodified criteria published, to the best of my knowledge, but this is what we have. And you have ankylosing spondylitis if you have one of the clinical criteria, which has to do with pain and mobility, and the radiographic criteria, which says you have sacroiliitis. And if you have a clinical criteria and definite radiographic findings, you have ankylosing spondylitis. And in the past, if you had the clinical criteria but without radiographic sacroiliitis, you had probable AS, okay? And we all know what the sacroiliitis is, but the problem is it's often in the eye of the beholder, because historically when we've seen trials of ankylosing spondylitis, when the radiographs are read locally and then sent for central read, the correlation between local interpretation of radiographs by the radiologist at your institution and what's read centrally by a radiologist trained to look for this is terrible, okay? So with all that, this led to the idea a few years back, about 15 years ago, to say, well, what are we missing by sticking with the diagnosis of ankylosing spondylitis? And the genesis of this was always the idea of, like, let's update those criteria, because the modified New York criteria date to 1983, I believe, and it was really the last criteria in medicine that relied on plain radiographs. And with the advent of more advanced imaging like CT and MRI, which really didn't exist, CT was in its early days in 1983, and MRI was barely around, we didn't have those options. And then there was the observation that there were people, particularly women, who had symptoms very consistent with axial disease, with inflammatory back disease, who did not have sacroiliitis. So that's what led to this sort of rethinking of things about 15 to 20 years ago, with the idea that maybe this was a little bit like rheumatoid arthritis, and that you got symptoms first, later got radiographic change, and we want to update the classification criteria to not rely on the radiographic findings, because that's going to wait too long. And if your goal is to try to figure out who has the disease so that you can intervene and treat their disease early, waiting for x-rays may take too long. And so that was sort of where this came, is that maybe this was sort of a progression over time, and that you had pre-radiographic disease and then later radiographic disease. And that's where this all came from. And where this came from was a recognition that there are people who fit, and that if you start to apply some of these newer imaging studies, you can identify them. But at the same time, this was an international work, and it recognized that there are some places in the world where it's not so easy to get an MRI. And so that's where the clinical criteria came in. And this was developed by the ASAS working group. They thought they were very clever, okay, because they came up with a term, axial spondyloarthritis, which had the same initials as AS. And they thought, well, that's going to make it easier because we're just going to sort of transition. That has then confused people for the last 15 years because the terminology gets really challenging. But the idea was that if you've got the people we know about who have chronic low back pain with an inflammatory feel to it, pain in the morning that gets better as you move around, et cetera, at an early age of onset, and imaging that could include an X-ray, could include a CT scan, or could include an MRI that showed sacroiliac changes, then you had the disease. This was axial spondyloarthritis. But then they also said, but wait a minute, if you can't get that imaging, at least have a positive HLA-B27, which many of you who've been in this for a while will remember that we stopped ordering them for a while because it didn't really change anything. But that sort of come back with this and said if you had at least two of the clinical features and a B27 and you couldn't get the imaging, then you could still qualify. And the intent was not to say if the imaging was negative, you qualify. It was that if it wasn't available to you, basically. And it turned out to be very helpful. And unquestionably, the imaging arm gives you much better specificity because you've got something objective to hang your hat on. But if you just do it with clinical arm, the specificity and sensitivity was pretty good. And overall, it actually turned out to be a reasonable way to make this diagnosis. And I will point to the fact on the top that the gold standard is a rheumatologist said you had it, right? Which is what happens with a lot of our classification criteria. We're trying to come up with a criteria, but at the end of the day, the real gold standard is a thoughtful, qualified rheumatologist says they have the disease, and do the people they believe have the disease fit according to those criteria? So that's where we came from. So where did this non-radiographic piece come up? Well, that happened after they did this. And the idea was, these are people who meet those criteria and have axial spondyloarthritis, but they don't meet the New York criteria for AS, which means they don't have sacroiliitis. They're going to meet the clinical part of that, but they don't have sacroiliitis. And so now you take this broader category of AxSpA, or AS, if you want to be fancy because it's the same initials, and you get either radiographic AxSpA, which is what we always thought about as ankylosing spondylitis, and hang on to that thought because I'm going to circle back to that at the very end, or non-radiographic AxSpA, which are the people who have this axial disease but don't have sacroiliitis. Are they different diseases? And that's the critical question, and that's what I want to spend the rest of the time on talking about. And the issue is that this isn't a continuous progression. These aren't necessarily people who start at non-radiographic disease and eventually progress to radiographic disease. They have all sorts of pathways on this, and there are people who develop axial spondyloarthritis who don't have sacroiliitis who will never develop sacroiliitis. And it's outside the scope of this talk, but that's frequently women, because women get less radiographic change over time. And so some people will eventually get to really severe AS if you follow them over time. Some people even present like that. But some people will always stay in this sort of non-radiographic area. And what does that mean in terms of treatment? Well, let's step back for a second and think about epidemiology. And how much of each are there really out there? And there's not a ton of really good data, but there are some good studies that looked at this. So this is some NHANES data from a few years back that looked at a survey of representative U.S. adults to figure out who has ankylosing spondylitis. And they found that overall, using a reported diagnosis of ankylosing spondylitis, they didn't have x-rays to look at in the NHANES survey, reported diagnosis, it was about 0.5%. But if they expanded the criteria, and these Amore and ESSG criteria are sort of like the precursors to the ASAS-AxSpA criteria, that it was about a percentage. And so, in other words, about 50% of the people who have axial spondyloarthritis have AS, and 50% sort of don't meet AS, or at least have not been told they have AS by criteria. And another study that I actually had a chance to be involved in that got published about 10 years ago was a CHARGE study that went back and looked at charts of rheumatologists across the country. Not to get into the details, they picked 100 rheumatologists, four areas of the country. They had them go look into their charts from people who had chronic back pain in their practice and screen them against these ASAS criteria. And what's key are the bottom two boxes on the right. When they drilled down on all these folks, they were able to classify a percentage of them as AS and a percentage of them as non-radiographic eczema, and it was relatively equal. And so what I'm saying here is what I think is important is that when you think of the universe of eczema out there, roughly 50% of those people have sacroiliitis that defines them as what we used to term AAS, or ankylosing spondylitis, and 50% don't. Does it matter? Well, it turns out they're very similar, okay? This is from a slide deck that the ASAS folks put out. This is an international working group. And they looked at what defines non-radiographic disease from AS from a couple of different cohorts. And it included people with early AS versus long-term AS. And they are about the same with two differences. The people with AS tend to be more likely to have an abnormal acute phase reactant, CRP. Okay, but even in those situations, only about half of them. And the people with AS, less likely to be women. Okay, and part of that is maybe underdiagnosis and underrecognition, but I think a lot of it is that women tend to have fewer radiographic changes on their x-ray, so they don't get picked up as AS. Now, to the point of, do they eventually turn into AS? The answer is not so much. Or at least that we know about. So this is some data from Mayo, the Olmsted County database. Not a big series, it's only 81 patients, but they picked up people with non-radiographic eczema. Now this is before the diagnosis came out, so they went back in a retrospective chart review, and then they followed them out for 10 years to see how many of them actually eventually progressed to AS with sacroiliitis, and it was a very small percentage. It was only about a quarter of them, and over 10 years, the majority of these folks never actually developed AS. They continue to have non-radiographic disease. All right, so there was that a backstory. Let me swing into treatment. How do we treat these folks? Well, the ASAS-EULAR recommendations haven't changed. So they took these recommendations from ankylosing spondylitis, ported them over, and said we're now axial spondyl arthritis. But at heart, they're largely the same recommendations, which says you need a rheumatology diagnosis, and just take a look at that second box. I'm going to come back to that. If you fail standard treatment with an NSAID, chronic NSAID use, then you get put on a biologic therapy. That was kind of always the way they looked at this, and it was a challenging sort of set of recommendations because there was nothing in between NSAIDs and expensive biologic therapy, unless you had peripheral disease, and then there's some potential role for sulfasalazine in there, or some of us will often use methotrexate if it's peripheral manifestations. What if it's axial disease? And these criteria have been updated over the years, and they haven't changed very much. The updates have mostly been that they started with TNF inhibitors, then added interleukin-17 inhibitors as an option, and now have JAK inhibitors as an option. Okay, and although they still say most people start with a TNF or an IL-17 inhibitor. Now, back to the second box. As they updated the recommendations, they said axial spondyl arthritis, you treat it like ankylosing spondylitis like we always did, with the caveat that if they have non-radiographic disease, if they don't have sacroiliitis on x-ray, you need to have a positive MRI or an elevated acute phase reactant, the CRP, to justify treatment with a biologic because you have to have some objective evidence that they have inflammatory disease because 25% of these patients, like all of our diseases, have a component of non-inflammatory pain, and that's not going to respond to biologic therapy, and I'm going to show you that in the data in a second. Okay, so with that in mind, before we get into the data, a quick poll. Which of these therapies is more effective for ankylosing spondylitis than it is for non-radiographic axial spondyl arthritis? TNF, IL-17, JAK, or none? All right, we'll move on. So most of you got it. So it turns out there is no difference. They're equally effective, and I'll show you the data. So here is some registry data. This is from Sweden. They took 86 folks with non-radiographic eczema, 200-something folks with AS, okay? Very similar baseline demographics, And it turns out their response to therapy, these were people starting a TNF inhibitor, their response to therapy by pretty much every measure of response was equivalent. And the differences they noticed, like I told you before, is that there are more women in the non-radiographic group and they tend to have a lower C-reactive protein. And so you can see on the bottom right there that the AAS group with the open circles started out much higher, had a bigger drop, never got as low with CRP. But in every other regard, they respond about the same. That's broad from a registration study. We actually have clinical trial data that shows the same thing. So here is adalimumab, okay? The ATLAS trial, which was their primary registry trial for ankylosing spondylitis, and later the ABILITY-1 trial that was for non-radiographic disease. Same outcome measure, ASAS-20 and ASAS-40 at 12 weeks, same dose, and if you look at the numbers, pretty similar. The response was pretty similar, with the caveat on the bottom that if you had a positive MRI, bone marrow edema, inflammation on MRI, or an abnormal CRP, you got better response in the non-radiographic group. Here's golimumab, two studies, GO-RAISE and AS, go ahead in non-radiographic AxSpA, 14-week outcome, 50 milligrams every 4 weeks, standard dose of golimumab, and again, not exactly the same, but the overall response rates are pretty similar, okay? And if, especially if you sort of adjust for the placebo response and look at the effect size. So you get a little higher response rate in the non-radiographic group, but a little higher placebo response rate in that study as well. And again, the people who had an abnormal MRI or CRP, or particularly both, responded better in the non-radiographic group. And etanercept, same story. I won't go through the details. Same story, two different trials, similar response. Doesn't matter whether it's AS or non-radiographic disease. This is the one I think that seals the deal. And this is from the original registry study for sertolizumab. Because when they got to sertolizumab, when they got to this trial, the AxSpA criteria, the ASAS criteria for AxSpA, were now in widespread use. So they developed a trial that included both patients with ankylosing spondylitis and patients with non-radiographic disease. And here, in the same trial, so you can argue about the other ones because it's two different studies and you're comparing across studies. Here you are in the same trial. If you look on the left, there's the total response. And if you look on the right, the two different groups on the right, AS or non-radiographic AxSpA, all of whom by definition in this trial had to have an abnormal MRI or an elevated CRP to get into the study, same response. Okay, what about disease progression? Not sure that we know what to do with this. So in truth, there are no controlled trials of disease progression with TNF inhibitors in any of these diseases, in non-radiographic or in ankylosing spondylitis, because you really can't, right? Because this is a slow process, and to do this, you'd have to do a multi-year placebo-controlled trial, and as Dr. Cavanaugh just talked about, ethically really challenging to do that when you have effective treatment. So it's never going to get done. The best that we know is that all these therapies reduce MRI evidence of inflammation, not structure, but inflammation, and that there's some evidence, if you go back and look at historical controls, that suggests that maybe there's a reduction in radiographic regression, particularly in the spine over time and the number of new syndesmophytes that develop. And there's some recent sort of sub-analyses and post-hoc analyses of some of this data, which sort of looks at people who were on a TNF for a period of time and then weren't on a TNF and looked at radiographic change in the 2 years after they received the TNF and suggested it changes. And I think that's real. I think that if you reduce inflammation, there's at least some reason to expect that you might have less progression, that you might have less syndesmophyte formation. But at the end of the day, we don't know how much that really is. And most importantly, we don't know what happens in terms of the sacroiliac joint. The clinical significance of that transition from non-radiographic AxSpA, which means you don't have sacroiliitis on x-ray, to ankylosing spondylitis or radiographic AxSpA where you do, we don't know what that means. It's a radiographic finding, but clinically, it's not clear that that actually means anything. All right, so this is what's led to this sort of confusion here, and I think it's worse in the U.S. because in the U.S., the FDA says there are two different diseases. There's ankylosing spondylitis, and drugs get approved for ankylosing spondylitis. And then there's non-radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, and drugs get approved for that. But they're two different lines in the product insert because they're approved for two different indications. In outside the U.S., particularly in Europe, the drugs are approved for axial spondyloarthritis. They're one indication. There's only one indication. It's axial spondyloarthritis, and with the caveat that if you have non-radiographic disease, if you don't have sacroiliitis to hang your hat on, you least have to have some evidence of inflammation, either an MRI or an elevated CRP, to justify more advanced therapies, whether it's a biologic or now a JAK inhibitor. All right, so let's look at the other targets. Does it matter there? And the answer is no. So here's secukinumab, two different studies. Not sure why I got cut off, but Measure 2, which was their AS registry study, and Prevent, which is their non-radiographic study, 16-week endpoint. And you can, again, look at an ASAS-40 and ASAS-20 response, really pretty similar across studies. Here's ixekizumab, two different studies. Actually, three, because the AS study was both COAST-V and W, and then a COAST-X is non-radiographic disease. They didn't even count by the time they got to the non-radiographic study. They didn't even report the ASAS-20 response because the ASAS-40 response is the type of response we're looking for. But again, very similar responses, whether it's AS or non-radiographic disease. And coming up, bimekizumab. Okay, this is the IL-17A and F inhibitor in that same family. Here is radiographic axSpA or ankylosing spondylitis, and I just call your attention to the red box on the top there. Primary endpoint ASAS-40, and now I'm going to show you the trial that they did with non-radiographic disease, and it very much looks like the same red box. Okay, same response rate. These patients in this particular trial had to have evidence of inflammation to get in. They had to have an MRI or an elevated CRP. And that's critical. That's the way you know that this is inflammatory back pain and not simply non-inflammatory pain that may not respond to the biologic. And then the last one I'll show you is now moving into JAK inhibitors, upadacitinib, two different studies. I showed you some of these studies yesterday. We talked about JAKs. The SELECT AXIS study was the AS study. That was their phase 2-3 AS registry trial. And then the SELECT AXIS 2, which was the one that had both AS failing a biologic, but in the arm that was non-radiographic disease, again, you see the response rates at both an ASAS-40 and an ASAS-20, very similar whether you had AS or non-radiographic disease. And then finally, this is from the British registry, and I think this came up earlier, where you have to be in a registry to get drug in a lot of European countries and certainly in Britain. But here, if they look at how long you stay on a biologic, depending on whether you're on whether you have AS or non-radiographic disease, it's about the same. So my main takeaway here is that it's confusing, and it confuses particularly a lot of trainees, but that non-radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, at the end of the day, is a regulatory construct. It's not a separate disease. When the FDA first looked at it, they had concerns, one, that these were people with fibromyalgia that were just sort of lumping in here, and I didn't show you that data, but there's now ample data that they are not, that they may have some of the fibromyalgia type criteria, but at the end, they're not the same. The most fibromyalgia patients don't end up getting classified as non-radiographic axSpA. And they were also concerned, the FDA, by the way, that people may just change, that this wasn't a chronic disease and that people might spontaneously get better. So that actually led to the original requirement that these drugs had to be tested in a one-year placebo-controlled trial for non-radiographic axSpA. They've recently let go of that requirement because what happened was when they did that, 75% of the patients were off drug by a year because the placebo arm didn't get sustained and they can't have symptoms, so they dropped out of the study. With some exceptions, and I pointed out the elevated CRP in AS and gender, more women in non-radiographic disease, clinically very similar, and the clinical response is essentially the same, particularly in the people who have elevated CRP or a positive MRI in terms of inflammation, and that the regulatory differences are, as I mentioned before. Last thing I'll talk about, and Dr. Gensler, who's on this paper, is coming up shortly. This just got published very recently. The term AS, the ASAS police are going to come after you pretty soon and tell you you can't use that term anymore. They have declared that ankylosing spondylitis is no longer ankylosing spondylitis. It is non-radiographic axial, or it's radiographic axial spondyl arthritis. And they've done a fair amount of work to go back and look at the two different criteria for classification and show that there's essentially homology, that there's virtually entirely overlap there. So I think over time, we're going to get away from AS and ankylosing spondylitis and get into radiographic axe spot. And eventually, I think we're going to get to where they are in Europe now, which is you have axe spa, and it's all the same disease, and some people have radiographic changes on their sacroiliac joints, and some don't, but they have the same disease process. So I know we're going to go to questions at the panel later, but I'll leave you with this to start thinking of them and get ready for it. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this reprise session from RoomNow Live 2024. This session and these recordings were sponsored by AbbVie, UCB, and Amgen. Be sure to register for Room Now Live 2025 when you can have full access to all the videos, all the recordings, all the downloads, and all the board questions that come out of Room Now Live 2025.